John joined Belden last year, the broadcast sales team. And John holds a BA in broadcast and electronic communications from Marquette. What he's going to talk about is the IEEE 802.1BA AVB, audio and video bridging. When was the last time we heard the term Ethernet? We hardly use that anymore. But this is a new AV system that hopefully will make all of our lives easier. So you ready? Just about?
Okay, here we go. Sorry about that, everybody. And thanks for staying late. I know we're running over a little bit here. So we'll start off with the big question of the day. Where is this guy? For those of you who don't know, this is Mr. Steve Lampen, who was originally scheduled to give this presentation. Anyway, he expresses his sincere apologies. He wasn't scheduled here last year and now has to miss this year. And he really does enjoy this event and community here. And scheduling conflict arose a couple of weeks ago, and he was strongly persuaded to go in one direction instead of another, which means he is not here. But before he reluctantly agreed to do that, he made the powers that be at Belden promise not to leave the WBA high and dry, and made him promise that we would still give a presentation. So Belden isn't really any different than any other company, and you know, all the marketing people think that all the salespeople are a bunch of schmucks. So they asked me to do it. And apparently they were right, because like a complete fool, I accepted. So I thought, now what? You know, I'm filling in for Steve Lampen, who's a renowned public speaker, a technology guru, award winner. He's authored several books. And I thought, man, these are really, really big shoes to fill. You know, so I thought, you know, if I'm going to do a good Steve impersonation, I better grow a beard. So a lot of really smart guys have a beard. So I decided to grow a beard. And there's me with my half-grown beard about a week ago. But I'm not a beard guy. And I've never been a beard guy, so it started getting a little bit shaggy. So when I decided to give it a little trim, I completely screwed the whole thing up. So off came the beard with a big thumbs up from my wife and my daughter, because they weren't real fond of it. So here we are. So here comes Ethernet. It's kind of an interesting title. Ethernet's been around a long time, almost as long as I've been around. And broadcasters have been talking about Ethernet for quite some time. You've probably read countless articles and seen presentations on AV-IT convergence and migration strategy. And although IT and Ethernet has become a very large part of the broadcaster's infrastructure, it still hasn't worked real well, or at all, for live production and transmission. But we think at Belden that we have a game changer in this new AVB audio-video bridging technology that has been added to the 802.1 standard. But to know where we need to go, it helps to know a little bit of history and where we've come from and why the current technology hasn't worked very well. So here's a very, very high-level brief history of Ethernet and how it came to be. In the late 60s, a guy by the name of Norm Abram was hired by the state of Hawaii to connect all of their computer systems. The problem was that he discovered that by the time you go down one mountain and across the water and up another one, the average cable length was going to be about 12 miles long from island to island. So we had to go wireless, and in the late 60s, the wireless of the day was radio. But the problem with radio is who sends and who listens when you have a lot of devices sending and a lot of devices listening. So we came up with the idea to divide the data into packets to avoid collision. And it worked, but it was only about 17% efficient. And he couldn't figure out what to do, and he knew he needed some help. So he took out an ad in a couple of California popular newspapers at the time for a free Hawaiian vacation. The caveat was that you had to be a computer science grad to qualify. Well, a guy by the name of Bob Metcalf answered the ad, and ironically, he had just completed a statistical analysis of computer data from MIT. So he was hired by Abram, and he set up Aloha Net over the radio and got the efficiency up to 80%. And he did this by creating some code to where all the devices, the transmitting devices, would listen first. And if they didn't hear anything, then they would transmit. And that's how he got the efficiency up to 80%. So it worked. And now he needed to name this technology. And at that time, the physicists of the world didn't believe that there could be nothing between the something. So they thought that everything had to be a something. So they called the nothing ether. So Metcalf thought this was a pretty interesting idea. And since the radio-based Aloha Net was traveling through the ether, he named the technology Ethernet. And that's where Ethernet came from. So a few years later, while this Aloha Net project was being finished up, across the water, a Xerox decided that they wanted to be the next IBM. So after Aloha Net was finished, they hired Metcalf and a guy by the name of Dave Boggs. And these guys were part of a special development team within Xerox. And these guys further defined the packets and the collision detection. And this would eventually become layers 2 and 3 in the Ethernet topology. You know, layer 1 is the physical, so you have your cable and your switches and so forth. And then layer 2 and 3 are the collision detection. Well, in this lab, on May 22nd in 1973, they achieved a 1 megabyte per second transmission over cable. This was the first Ethernet cable. And if Steve Lampin were here, he'd reach into his bag and hold up this cable for you all to see. Well, anyway, a few years later, Xerox decided to divest in this special development group. They decided there was just too much capital involved to become the next IBM, and they decided not to make that investment. So they fired Metcalf and Boggs, and they ended up giving the Ethernet technology to IEEE. And IEEE turned this into an open free standard. But Xerox didn't give it all away. The technology was free, but they held on to one thing. And if you remember a few years ago, or not a few, probably about 20 years ago now, the Betamax and VHS wars between Sony and JVC. And even though Sony had the superior technology, the picture was better, the sound was better, the machine was better built with Betamax, Sony charged an arm and a leg if you wanted to play on their playground. Where VHS, JVC, virtually gave this technology away, but they held on to one thing. The letters VHS, with the little rectangle around it, is a registered trademark of JVC. So every time somebody wanted to make a machine, make tape, make duplications, they had to give JVC a little money to use that logo. Well, Xerox did the same thing with Ethernet. And if you notice, we have a little R up there next to Ethernet. So if there are any attorneys in the room for Xerox, we would like to acknowledge that Ethernet is a registered trademark of Xerox. And it remains that way to this day. And Ethernet is used, the word Ethernet is used throughout this presentation and all over the place. And if Xerox wanted to, they could probably come back and sue every single person in this room for misuse of the word Ethernet. Well, they haven't done that so far, and we hope they don't, because they have pretty deep pockets over there at Xerox. So anyway, so now we have Ethernet. But the thing that makes Ethernet work really well for packetized data is the reason that it doesn't work well for audio and video. Ethernet takes the simplest path it can at any given moment in time. So that means, from a broadcast perspective, that multiple bit streams can take a different path. And if they take a different path, and they both take the simplest path, well, that path is going to be different because they can't take the same one. So now you have multiple bit streams. They're out of time, out of phase. So to get around that, buffering was introduced. But the problem with buffering is now you have a delay that's unpredictable. And if you can't predict the delay, you can't predict any latency, and you can't predict the time of delivery, which means a broadcaster can't use this technology to switch. They can't use this technology to monitor off-air and do a host of other things that we all take for granted with baseband audio and video. And we've all experienced this. We've all gone to YouTube or our favorite network internet site. You know, you can all watch 24 hours after its original air date, your favorite primetime show now on the internet. You can go to YouTube. You can stream Netflix through a set-top box. And we've all experienced this. You double-click on the window, and sometimes it plays pretty quickly, and other times you get this spinning hourglass. Well, that's not acceptable to broadcast. And even if it starts right away, sometimes halfway through the piece of media, you get the spinning hourglass, and you got to wait for it to rebuffer. Well, broadcasters can't make a living doing that. So fast forward to the 80s and 90s now, late 80s, early 90s, and we know that Ethernet has collision detection slowing it down in layer 2 and layer 3. So a bunch of manufacturers figured out a way that to get around this. They recognized the power of the Ethernet technology and its topology. They recognized that adds, moves, and changes were simple with a data network architecture. And we've all experienced this too. One day you could be in the East office and you take your computer and walk over to the West office and you plug it into the wall and your IT guy changes a patch cord and now your office is instantaneously moved from here to here. Very powerful stuff. Well, a few manufacturers, and Cirrus Logic was the first one with their CobraNet technology, recognized that if you have a closed system, there are no collisions. And this would be a LAN-type technology. That they could go into layer 2 and layer 3 if they don't have to worry about collisions and turn off this collision detection. They could also turn off then the buffering or make the buffering window a lot smaller. So they introduced a compression limiting delay and EQ for large venues and stadiums. You've probably all seen clips of somebody receiving an award on the pitcher's mound in a baseball stadium, or some NFL films footage from the 70s or 80s of somebody accepting an award or giving a presentation. And the delay and the echo is so drastic that you can barely understand what the guy's saying. So anyway, so Cirrus Logic developed this CobraNet and this compression limiter and delay in EQ, and they recognized that this could be done in a computer for each speaker and amp. You could simply have an address for each object. So now that all of these things were objects instead of a system, they could customize the delay, echo cancellation, and EQ for each object for each stadium that this system was installed in. And this was great. It made things very easy. It made management easy. It made installation easy, since all the cable was agnostic. So they reached out to other manufacturers of audio boards and amplifiers and other pieces and parts in the system. And they asked them to be CobraNet compliant. And they all thought it was a pretty good idea. But to be CobraNet compliant, you had to pay a fee, a licensing fee. So now all of a sudden our free and open IEEE standard isn't free and open anymore. It's proprietary and you have to pay to play. And ironically, and this is now in 2010, A guy by the name of Reed Hunt, who headed up the FCC from 1993 to 97, said at a speech at the Columbia Business School, now again, this is in 2010, he said, in 1994, he said that the internet should be the common medium in the United States and broadcast should not be. Would have been pretty cool if he would have told all of us this in 1994 instead of 2010, but he decided to wait to 2010 to tell the world that internet was going to be the way. So later in 2010, a committee was formed, and they began drafting a new IEEE standard. And the interesting thing here is that they just didn't add on to the existing standard. They decided to rewrite the current standard. And they recognized three crucial elements that they would need to add to the standard. One was precise timing to support the multiple bit streams, and also to offer low jitter media clocks so that you could have some synchronization with definitive timing. They also recognized the need for a simple reservation protocol that would allow an application on an endpoint device to notify the various network elements in the path so that they could reserve the resources necessary to support a particular stream. And the third thing that they recognized was the need for queuing and forwarding rules that would ensure that this stream would pass through the network with the delay specified by the reservation. So they did this by implementing four new parts to the 802.1 standard. The first was precise synchronization. And there are two standards for this. There's a 2 millisecond delay standard, and that's intended to be used for media, and a 50 millisecond for control. So this precise timing will support low jitter media clocks and provide accurate synchronization of multiple streams. So for example, if you had video on one, audio on another, alternate language on yet another, you can synchronize all of those streams. And how it does this is it provides a common time base for sampling and receiving these data streams. So within the timing domain, there's a single device that will provide a master timing signal called the Grand Master Clock. That's how it's defined in the standard. And all other devices synchronize their clocks with this master. So part of the implementation process is going to be across the board, that every device in the chain, the talker, all of the listeners, and the senders in between, the hubs and switches, all have to be compliant. So implementation is going to be a big task. The second thing that they implemented was traffic shaping for the media streams. So traffic shaping is the process of smoothing out the traffic in a stream so that the packets making up the stream are evenly distributed in time. So if traffic shaping is not done at the sources and at the bridges, then the packets tend to bunch up into bursts of traffic. And these bursts of traffic can overwhelm subsequent bridges and devices in the path. The third thing that they recognized was the need for admission controls. And this is all about bandwidth reservation. So along with timing traveling from the beginning to the end of the path, they need dedicated bandwidth from the beginning to the end of the path. So this again implies that all of the sending devices, the switches in between, and the listening devices need to have a specific amount of bandwidth reserved. So, even though the preceding two mechanisms can reliably deliver this data with deterministic low latency and low jitter, it'll only do so if the network resources, So all the devices that I just described are available along the entire path from the talker to the listener. So in the AVB protocol, the term talker is used to denote a stream source, and listener denotes a stream destination. So in this architecture, it's both the talker and the listener's responsibility to guarantee that the path is available and reserve the resources. And then, of course, the fourth thing is identification of non-participating devices. And for the next few years, there'll be a whole bunch of these because the entire install base of the internet and all the data centers that all the internet traffic goes through today is non-AVB compliant. This is all brand new stuff. So, and one last thing that they've adopted from the current 802.1 standard is the redundancy, which is a high availability, seamless redundancy, which says nominal switch recovery times will be between 100 milliseconds and 50 microseconds. And that technology has actually come a long way. Our own Hirschman switch, which we had in our booth, if you stop by, has a recovery time of 0 milliseconds, which means mathematically no bits are lost. And this is critical for mission-critical operations, such as yours. We know the advantages of Ethernet, that it's very versatile, that it's easily designed and installed. We've been doing it for a long time. It's made to be reconfigurable, so adds, changes, and moves are very easy. It can be redundant. And there's a huge number of IT professionals out in the workspace. But one of the tricks, of course, over the next several years is for you all to teach these IT professionals what makes a pretty picture and what makes great sound, because they don't know. Just like we need to learn a bit of IT, we need to teach them a bit of AV. And this technology, again, is very, very reliable. And these Hirschman switches are used in nuclear power plants, on aircraft carriers, on the International Space Station. So very, very reliable, mission-critical stuff. Mean time between failure ratings is 40 years on these things. Absolutely incredible. If you'd like to learn more, that you know, essentially is AVB in a nutshell. So high-level overview. We kept it nice and short so that you can all still get to dinner on time. If you'd like to learn more, I'll put my contact information up here. I'd also like to introduce the local Belden AV account manager. If you don't know him, he's Mr. Don Heinzen. He lives here right outside of Madison. So if you don't know him, we'll hang out for a little while. Please come up and grab a business card and introduce yourself. And if you'd like to get a little bit more nitty-gritty into the standards of AVB and learn a little bit more depth on each of these four parts and when and how they intend to be implemented, this is a great website to go to. www.avenue.org. And they have some basic information about the committee. And if you drill down a little bit, I'll put my contact information up here as well. If you have a little bit of trouble finding it, they have some great white papers on there on how this is specifically intended to be used for audio and video and broadcast transmission specifically. There's two great white papers up there. So you guys that are a little bit deeper into the IT space that would like to know more, this is a great place for you to go. And if you have any other questions for me, please feel free to contact me at any time. There's my email address, john.purvey@belden.com. And I'll put some cards up here for you to grab. My phone number is, I didn't put it on here, but my phone number is 815-441-4000. 5298. And that, my friends, is AVB in a nutshell. So sorry for the slow start, and thanks for hanging in there with us.
I do. Do you know whether or not some of the current implementations like Axia's LiveWire are utilizing this, or are they planning to?
You know, I don't know. I'm not familiar with that. This is all very, very brand new.
Mm-hmm.
So I would suspect that that is a closed technology that is only suitable.
I think they've done something like JVC where they've trademarked the name, but they've offered the technology to other vendors. For example, Nautel has it on their Exciter inputs.
Yeah, and you know, and since the introduction of AVB, a couple of these companies here, and this was just a partial list that we put together. You know, but all of these technologies are proprietary closed technologies, and they're Ethernet-like, in that they use Ethernet cable and Ethernet hubs and switches and so forth. But these are all proprietary technologies. Now, some of these guys are starting to come together and form little groups and making, you know, revising their code and adding to their own code so that they have some interoperability with other manufacturers. A lot of them are resisting going AVB. And you ask them why, and they say, well, geez, you know, we spent 3 years and $10 million developing our proprietary technology. The last thing we want to do is start giving it away for free. That's a huge revenue
HP
stream
Palm
for us.
Palm OS, too. That worked out real good for them. Thank you, John.
All right. Thank you. Anything else? Thank you.